Hello out there, and welcome to IMPACT, the official podcast of Drexel University School of Education's Education Doctorate Program. I'm Dr. Deanna Hill, here with my podcasting partner, Dr. Stephanie Smith-Bugai, and we're pleased to have Dr. Erica McDowell join us today on IMPACT. Dr. McDowell is Clinical Associate Professor in Educational Leadership and Policy at the University of Buffalo. We're excited to have Dr. McDowell as a guest today to learn about the impact that her Drexel EdD has had on her leadership and scholarship. So, Dr. McDowell, tell us what you've been up to professionally since you graduated with your EdD in Educational Leadership and Management from Drexel.
Well, first, let me thank you both for being here. What have I been up to? Probably a little too much. So, when I successfully defended my dissertation May 2020, just for everyone, I was a coronavirus defensor. I was currently working at the School District of Philadelphia as the Executive Director of Professional Development. But with my EdD, I took my superintendent test, and I'm certified to be a superintendent in New Jersey. And so I got an opportunity to lead a group of Montessori schools. I was the regional hub leader right after. It was basically like a couple of months later that I got that opportunity. And then during that time, I opened up my own LLC, Inspired Minds Collide. And so we have contracts with the Pennsylvania Department of Ed, Rising Tide Montessori, and a plethora of other clients that I work with. And then I got to a crossroads. A lot of my work is around cultural responsiveness, equity, and belonging. And I felt like I was doing this work, but not getting what I needed to be successful. So this is a really interesting story. I walked up to my job, Wildflower Schools, and said, I don't know if I can do this in the same capacity. And at the same time, someone mentioned my name in Buffalo. Who would have thought I ended up in Buffalo because of the work I do across the continental United States. And so I flew out for the job talk. I actually was looking to move probably Buffalo or LA. I know that's a jump. And then I approached my job and said, I probably will need to reimagine this. And so currently I am a clinical associate professor at UB, but I'm also part-time a national equity steward for Wildflower Schools and the co-CEO of their Black Wildflowers Fund. So I think my time at Drexel gave me that push that I needed to go and see what was out there for me and what lives that I needed to collaborate with for the liberation of all.
Yes, well, that is wonderful. And yes, LA and Buffalo, quite dichotomous from each other, but it sounds like that you landed in the place that you want to be and that you're doing good work. So you have been very busy, as you just shared, since completing your EdD. Now, as you are aware, the Drexel EdD in Educational Leadership and Management is designed to prepare scholarly practitioners to identify and address problems of practice in their own professional context. So thinking back, from when you decided on Drexel, what made the Drexel EdD appealing to you? And what were you looking for in a doctoral program when you decided on Drexel?
Ooh, wonderful question. And I'll leave the other schools nameless that I applied to. What pushed me over about Drexel was the cohort model. Shout out to the great Cohort 8. We are very serious about that. It was the professorship. If I'm very transparent, our professorship in the EdD program at the time when I was going was so culturally and linguistically diverse, right? That was something that was very big for me, particularly as a current district employee in Philadelphia. I didn't want to go to a program where my professorship and the folks that I was working with did not understand that context. Also, I don't know if you can feel the energy, but I am not a soul online person. So really what sold me to Drexel's EdD was the hybrid model. I loved meeting with my folks for a long weekend, right? And to that point, I'm still connected to my cohort. I'm still connected to my chair. Shout out to Dr. Kathleen Provenzano, because that family has never left me. Even when I've transitioned to different roles, like the EdD program at Drexel has always been a safe place and home for me. And so I'm glad the program rose up to what I expected and it exceeded it even more.
So tell us a little bit about your dissertation research. How did you come to your problem of practice? What did you learn about it? And then what would you say has been the most significant impact of your dissertation?
Ooh. So my dissertation surrounds teachers' perceptions and decisions in urban discipline, right? I am so thankful for my professors, because when I started my program, I think anyone who's listening, who's a part of a doctoral program, you have an idea of what you want your practice, right? Your problem of practice, right? And it morphed, and I had to do some unlearning, right? Through my courses on what actually did I want to study? And what I did was, I'm a qualitative researcher. Shout out to all my mixed methods and quant folks. That's just not me. I really wanted to sit and talk to teachers who were implementing some sort of framework, right? And talk about why their data was still disproportionate, even when you had all of these supports from your district or your school, right? And I did want to push and think about, if you look at the statistics for teachers, most of our teachers are white and female. It's between like 82, 86, right? And so if that is a real fact for us, but we don't want to disproportionately affect our students, what do we need to do? What conversations? Because no one starts a job saying, I'm going to disproportionately harm folks, particularly among gender and race. No one does that. I hope not, right? And so I wanted to dig deeper and talk to teachers and talk to leaders in a case study, right? And see what that looked like and explore that. And I'm proud to say that it has been the North Star of my work moving forward, right? And knowing that, I'm glad that I was able to really think about, I remember sitting in a course at Drexel and I got so mad with my feedback from my problem statement. And I was just frustrated. I was like, why won't anybody hear me? And I appreciate my cohort, and the way our classes were modeled was, I was getting feedback from folks who were in the class with me and also from my professorship. And without that good advice and that good feedback, my dissertation would not be what it was and is. It's published, so you can go McDowell 2020, remember coronavirus, right? But also a launching point into my own practice, how folks are showing up, what perceptions am I bringing into my work as I'm leading and facilitating, right? Because we're human. But if we don't really look at our data and look at what's happening, we're going to keep doing something that's adversely hindering the learners that we love and care about. So that was my dissertation. I'm proud. I tell people all the time, it was very much a labor of love. My theoretical frameworks are very much controversial. I'll leave them nameless. But at the end of the day, it's been able to be used as a conversation piece for folks who didn't want to have the conversation. And so I'm really, really proud of that, that we were able to have conversations and folks and look at data and really think about like our future steps, right? Like, what can we do? Because I'm a solutions oriented leader. Like, I love talking. I love getting the data, thick, rich data, right? But at the end of the day, I needed to be applied to practice. And so I think my study actually helped me leverage that. And I was in an EDD program that allowed me to be the scholar practitioner I knew I could be, right? It wasn't Erica, fit into this box. This is what I took a breath of fresh air after my first couple classes and went, wait, I can show up the way I need to. I can bring everything that I've learned in my career and do this. Then yeah. And so to produce that dissertation was a labor of love, particularly in the middle of coronavirus when you're trying to collect data, but we made it. And I hope that I'll be able to continue to use that work in my future endeavors.
Wow, that's incredible. And it's clear that your dissertation research and experience doing it has been significant in so many different areas. And you had started to mention something about being a solutions-oriented leader, and that connects with this next question, which I warn you is a bit lengthy. Okay. So as you know, one of the Drexel differences is our focus on sustainable leadership, which includes understanding how systems work and coming to understand how one's own worldview, values, beliefs, and habits of mind influence one's leadership. So how did this impact the way that you see yourself within your own context?
I sit here today as a terminal degree Black woman from Paterson, New Jersey. The statistics probably would have told you just bare that I shouldn't be here and be occupying this space. And so when you ask that question about that, about like my impact and like Drexel and sustainable leadership, the thing that I'm working on now as a professor and as a consultant is folks understanding that they're the biggest tool in their toolbox. You're the greatest tool in your toolbox. Because I can give you pedagogy, I can give you strategies, I can give you tools, but a tool is only as good as its user. And I think sometimes when we're talking about cultural responsive leadership, equitable mindsets, right? We are always auditing everybody else. Like, let's audit the building. Let's audit. When are we going to sit back and audit ourselves? How am I showing up? How is my worldview impact the way I perceive something? And so I've been on a really like big push on folks figuring out what is the structure of joy for you at work? What is the recipe, right? Because what we're starting to see is that we have been affected by all of these things, right? And what Drexel taught me, and I was not going to share this, but I am. I went through a lot during my EDD. I got married. I got divorced. I had 3 surgeries, right? Actually, cohort 8 gave me a fake appendix and sat it on the table one weekend, right? And so it shaped my worldview on one, I belong to myself first before I belong to anybody. And I want to really think about what bell hooks talks about in teaching to transgress, right? We need communities of resistance, places we know we're not alone. And so my biggest push right now is folks to interrogate themselves and go, how am I showing up? And like I told you about that statistic, right? Even if I am different from the students and the learners I'm serving, what do I know and have lived that could be not true about the folks that I'm curating environments for, right? And then the second part is we have to build community. And what Drexel taught me about leadership is that it is a community effort. Like it is, as much as I am the dotted line for some things, I can name at least 5 or 10 people who helped me get there. And I think if we get very much strategic with our budding learners, our budding principals, folks who are about to go in the field with, who's your community? It's not going to be easy. You have some cultural shifts you're working with. If you have been, my dissertation was on urban schools, right? I've worked in suburban, Montessori, right? And so thinking about how do I curate that mindset that you're the greatest tool in your toolbox, a tool is only good as its user. And once you figure out yourself, you can lean on your community to get what you need to be successful. So that's really what has pushed me, because one of the things that I tell people all the time, I didn't feel like I belonged. I've worked my whole life. I went to performing arts high school. I am an original heavyset woman. McDowell's are really buxom women and we are proud of that. But I didn't never, it was hard for me to belong. And can I tell you who helped me belong? Teachers, Mr. George Durrani, right? I think about Dr. Kathleen Provazano, right? I think about Dr. Ken Marowitz and Russ. He's resting in power. He's one of our Drexel professors that passed away and showed me that I can be myself. And so that's what Drexel taught me, but it also gave me the community to continue to feed my bucket, right? And to see myself with my own context. I can't teach these things and not do it. And so part of my work is interrogating myself constantly as I've shifted to Buffalo, right? You've heard anything about Buffalo, we've had a rough year, right? And so how do I take the way that I present as a leader and be community centered, right? And so that is the work that I'm focused on. I'm excited that the Drexel difference impacted me so greatly. And it is a decision that I do not regret. Because when we talk about equity, giving folks what they need to be successful, Drexel did that for me. And I'm so proud of that. And I'm so proud of my safe place in my home.
Beautiful and powerful, and really connected to the next question, which is about addressing issues of equity, inclusion, belonging, and social justice, which is at the core of teaching and learning and scholarship in the EDD program. So We just revised our EDD keystones, you'll be happy to know, and you know, really to make our commitment more explicit and visible. And I guess thinking back about your experience in the program and what you've taken from it, the impact that it has, talk to us a little bit about how your dissertation research, your experience in the program, how has that impacted your ability to contribute to equity, social justice, and or anti-racist practices in your current professional practice?
That's a great question. I'm going to take my time on that one. One thing that I knew about Drexel was it was culturally and linguistically diverse. And I talked about the professorship, but my cohort. We were literally coming from different walks of life, like completely. Everybody wasn't in K-12, right? Some people were in the medical field. We had one of my good friends, I won't mention his name, he flew to classes from Florida every month, right? Like, and so I think with my research, it took me out of the tunnel that most of us fit in to survive and work, right? It's just like, I got to get through this. I got this job and I have to make it. What my cohort experience at Drexel and my learnings at Drexel, it pushed me into being uncomfortable, but knowing that uncomfortable, not being comfortable does not mean I don't belong, right? And so I think when we talk about equity, anti-racism, I think about Cobb and Cronapple, right? Belonging is defined as an experience, as experiencing appreciation, validation, acceptance, and fair treatment within an environment, right? I'm not gonna sit here and say my Drexel program was perfect, but can I tell you, I belong. I remember sitting in a class and being able to get up and say, excuse me, I just have a counter thought. And no one judged me. It was kind of like, okay, Erica, let's hear what you have to say. And let's be clear. The folks that I were countering did not look like me. I am technically a part of a marginalized community, but I had voice, right? And so when I come into different spaces now, right, folks should not have to fit in to belong. They should be able to be who they are. And I think what Drexel, particularly our EDD program, been, and I know a lot of things has, like there's been a lot of racial reckonings and I want to honor what's going on in our world. But if you read my dissertation, I had this fire for a long time, right? Part of my motivations was dismantling these systems of oppression, particularly in our education system. Go to Brown versus Board. Okay, would you like to talk about it, right? And being able to sit and have that conversation with colleagues at a different level has impacted me now. So when I'm talking to my students, I'm able to say what needs to be said, but also allow them to fit in, because they don't need to change themselves and I'm not gonna change myself. I know you can't see me, but I dress like this every day. I want my students to come in, my students giving folks what they need to be successful. I've learned from Drexel all the way to my professional career, even little things about accommodations. As a professor, I literally love the accommodations that Drexel made for folks. And I wanted to bring that, because when we talk about equity, yes, we have to go to the house that's on fire, right? So race, we're talking about gender, but there's folks who I realized like could not get to a certain place because the elevator didn't work and they were enabled by their wheelchair. And what Drexel did was really expose me and give me a lot of pedagogy. Can I tell you, like, my bathroom during my doctoral degree was literally stacks of printed articles that I'm highlighting, like, and I bring that to my practice now. My bathroom looks the same exact way. I'm going into I have to be in the ground and in the meat, right, to understand that that's how we liberate systems oppression, particularly when we talk about equity and anti-racism. So it started from Drexel, made me very unapologetic about what needed to happen, and understanding that I needed to keep that energy regardless of if I were in Philadelphia, if I were still at Drexel, or if I'm in Buffalo. And I think that the powerful part of our program is that that community is so strong, even if you try to want to give up, and I've had multiple times, my community's right there. How are you doing? I remember a professor in my EDD program called me in Chicago and was like, Erica, he just knew something was wrong and he called me. Shout out to Dr. Barber, right? Just called me, and he's a practicing educator, and called me because he saw me. He knew what my work was, but he knew something was going on. And that's what I give to my students now. I'm about process, not product, right? And so I believe that Drexel is giving me that gift, and I get to give it to my students at UV and all of my clients. And I'm so excited about that. That's why I'm always like, Drexel Dragons, I'm so proud, because it changed my life.
Well, that is great. And you sort of answered what we were going to ask next. So I'm going to move on, but you know, you've had a successful career already as an educator, an administrator, a consultant, and a business owner. But what's next for you professionally? Where do you see yourself 5 years from now? What additional impact would you like to have on society?
Ooh, that's a lot. Okay, let's dance with it. 5 years. I will be 42. I'm just going to be honest. I'm 42. I'll be 42 in 5 years. If I'm honest, when I talk to people about being the greatest tool in your toolbox, it has to start personally. Right. I want to be in partnership again. Shout out to my stepson, but other than him, I have not birthed any children. And so when people ask me that question, in 5 years, I'd love to be in partnership. I'd love to be a parent in some sort of way. Now with that, that is why I've worked so hard. People are like, Dr. E, why you got a million jobs? Because part of that is I'm manifesting a life. I'm trying to create generational wealth, not only mentally, right? But also educationally. I'm so proud to be the only terminal degree person on my maternal side, right? That's not going to happen anymore, right? And so part of my work in the next 5 years is to build my company. If I've been very transparent, if something were to happen to me, it goes to my nieces and my glam niece, right? We're building something here. And I think for me at UB, in 5 years, I direct our administrative certification program, which has a huge equity mindset lens. I am trying to build sustainability where you would not need Dr. E. In 5 years, I should be able to see all the seeds that I've planted and they started to grow. So then when I need to get into a watering season, like have a personal life that I don't really have right now, I'll be able to watch those seeds grow. And I've already seen it, right? My employees are now, you know, professors other places. They're directors of education programs. They are doing the work. And so in 5 years, I want to hear somebody say, Dr. E helped me. You know, Dr. E really just sat on a Zoom for 3 hours and read something for me because I needed that. And I think for me, Drexel, it's funny. Our professors really modeled that of I am here for you. I'm 100% in, but I have a whole life outside of here. And both are important. Dr. Marwitz used to give us gifts at the end of his class that his wife made, right? It was like M&M's something. And so this year, what did I do? I brought chocolate covered Oreos and pretzels because strawberries are out of season in Buffalo. And we celebrated at the end of my class. Drexel has given me legacy work. So in the next 5 years, the way I talk about Dr. Ken, you don't even have to say my name. Are children learning? Are you getting what you need? Let's talk about SEL, right? Am I getting what I need? Are leaders not burning out at the same rate that they are now? Are we not trying to find people to teach, right? I'm a legacy educator. My dad is a retired art teacher from Patterson Public Schools. How do I continue that legacy? So in the next 5 years, I'm centering me. I don't know if that's what you wanted to hear, but in the next 5 years, Erica's centering her health. I'm going to be a healthier person. I'm going to open myself up, but I'm also going to just continue to plant seeds because the work is never unfinished. And I also realized that it's a community effort. And once I got out of that, because I used to have this lot of pressure, because Drexel makes you proud. Like, I will tell you this, when you graduate from Drexel University, you feel like you can conquer the world. But at the same time, I need a world that's going to support me. And so that's what I want to do in the next 5 years. How do we create liberatory and inclusive environments where folks can stand tall and say, I want to do this personally, and this is what I want to do professionally? We don't have those conversations. We don't. And so I hope I've answered your question, but that's where I am. I'm centering myself. I'm centering my health because I'm the greatest tool in my toolbox. And if I'm not okay, I can't do the work that I know I've been called to do. And I don't feel like I can eventually not work a job. Someone laughed at me the other day. I was like, my goal is to not work all these jobs. Like, that's the goal, right? And to be able to give a job to someone else. Oh, this is, I see your gifting, right? And so the next 5 years, I continue to do that, but I'm centering me first. Thank you, Drexel.
Well, we love it. And we're not looking for any particular answers, just whatever you have to offer and to share. And as a qualitative researcher, you know that everybody's unique lived experiences are so different. Come on. Yeah, you sharing with us. So we're going to move on to a few lighter questions if you have time. All right. So the first one is, if you could only choose one superpower, which one would you select?
Being a healer.
Right.
I would want to be a healer. People already say I kind of like when they talk to me, because I'm also a coach, right? I feel so much better. I remind them, I'm not a clinician. I have a doctorate of education, okay? I'm going to have to refer to somebody else, but my superpower would be to be a healer, because I think somebody in my ancestral line was a healer, and I'd love that superpower to just jump on me so I could just heal.
Love it.
Dr. McDowell, this might not be easy to respond to on the spot, but how would you describe your perfect day?
Ooh, okay. You ready? My perfect day currently, it's a Thursday. Why? Because I teach two classes, one from 4:10 to 6:30 and then 7 o'clock to 9:45. Yes, Drexel has prepared me very well. So that's my perfect day. I wake up, I take a breath, I meditate. Thursdays, usually I have a me time, whether that's talking to a therapist or my coach or anything. I'm being very transparent because Thursday's my heavy day, right? So that's around the 10 o'clock hour. I drive to UB, open my office up, talk to a couple faculty, and then I'm starting to like really hone in on what I'm going to teach that day. I have a couple meetings. Like next week, I have to meet with Dean Rosenblith at UB. Like we just talk and like have those moments. I get to interact with faculty, and then I start to teach my classes. In the break last year, I made a whole meal. I made oxtails, rice and peas, and cabbage because I started to notice my students were going through and were hungry. And so I needed to model for them that we eat. So I usually I'll take a break, eat with my students, have some meetings there. 9:45, I'm driving home. I'm gonna call my mama and make sure she's okay. I either will stop somewhere. There's a great place, Fat Cats in Buffalo, that has the best fried haddock and mac and cheese. So if I got a little energy, I will go to Fat Cats and sit like with folks. Sometimes I'll just get something to drink, get a water and take it to go. If I'm tired, I'll go home, take a breath. And can I tell you why Thursday's my greatest day? Because I usually have an email from a student talking about something I did in a class. I looked last week, Friday morning, and I had like 3 or 4 emails from students. Dr. E, I wish I had your energy. And can I tell you that fills my cup, and not in a haughty way, but in a way where I still struggle if I belong. I still struggle with that sometimes, right? I occupy spaces, I do keynotes for 5,000, 6,000 people, and I'm still like, me, right? And so Thursday, that day in the life, I'm able to give, and I'm also able to open up and receive. And so that's a great day in the life, and Thursdays right now are my favorite days because those are days that I'm in person teaching in Buffalo.
Wonderful. So last question, Dr. McDowell, what has been the best live performance you have seen? A concert, play, anything, spoken word, doesn't matter.
Okay, so let's give you context. I have a BFA in theater education from Howard University. I also have a master's in educational theater in colleges and communities from NYU.
So all right, one of the best. top 100.
Top 100. I'm going to share a vulnerable point, but it is my tool of liberation because I'm the greatest tool in my toolbox. Best show I ever saw, Rent on Broadway.
Nice. Classic.
And yes, in the movie, I love the movie, but I will be transparent with folks. It hits at cores of me. So if certain people know I'm watching it a lot, they're like, you okay? Like, you've been watching all to Rent, because I'll get the soundtrack and everything. But what I love about that performance, and I think you guys saw the live, right? And I don't know if anybody knows the story, but they had to play the recording from the dress rehearsal because one of the primary actors broke his leg or something happened. And if you could, and at the end, they swap to live with the actor with his foot up and they're singing the last song, right? And one of the songs, and it's actually one of my girlfriend's high school graduation songs, 525,600 minutes. How do you measure of year? And Rent is that thing where I'll put it in a class, right? Because there's characters in there, especially when I'm working with an older retired population, they're learning and growing. And so I'm like, what characters have you seen that you're not familiar with? If they were right here, what would you ask, right? But I think Rent also helped me see myself when it's a part where like I could play that character just as I am and sing. I think people know I got a little singing. It's only backup. But when someone stands and just sings, if you watch every keynote I do, I'm probably singing. I'm singing something, right? And so Rent is my thing. In every medium, the TV adaptation, the play, and the movie. Love, 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 Rent. And if you hear the story about the writer, he passed away before he even saw it get big.
Oh, wow.
So like, it's a story about like, folks were crying opening day because he had passed. He didn't even get to see it. So Rent, let me stop. I love Rent.
No, I mean, Rent is amazing. I love Light My Candle is my favorite, but I'm a Mimi person.
Hell so, yeah.
It's great. So it has been a pleasure to have EDD alumnus, Dr. Erica McDowell on Impact today. Thank you, Dr. McDowell, for sharing with us. We are always incredibly honored and excited to hear the amazing ways our EDD alums are having an impact in the world. Dr. McDowell's bio will be posted with the link to this episode on our EDD program website. All right. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Impact. We look forward to the next episode where we hear from other alums about the impact that earning a Drexel EDD has had on their professional practice, research, policy changes, and the larger society. Goodbye for now.